Hi, this is comedian Mary Santora, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Elizabeth Seaman. Enjoy.
Welcome to The Default Setting, where we find out what makes you tick, because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick. Co-host Elizabeth Seaman is out for the evening, but we do have another Cleveland-based at one time comedian here, Mr. T.M. Francis. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
Thanks for joining us. I am wonderful. Your default setting is humor deflection.
I would say so, yeah. It's the one writing characteristic that I always remember having is that when something bad happens, no matter how bad it is, you should probably make a joke about it. Sadly, a lot of people don't feel that way.
Are you at all, like, did you watch Friends? Are you, like, do you hate it, love it, don't care about it?
Growing up in the 90s, I caught some random episodes, and I think every girl that I've ever dated has had a pretty strong connection to that show. So yeah, I've seen a lot of it. I do like it. Some, you know, some more than others. It's not exactly my sense of humor all the time.
Sure. But yeah. The thing I always think about when I think about humor is a deflection is the Chandler character on that show. And what's funny is I never thought I was that person who deflected with humor until I started watching some of the shit that he would do in episodes where, like, when things just got really weird or too heavy for him, he would just, like, at one point he would just, like, full on start, like, break dancing, like, if things just got really awkward. And that's me. Like, that's the kind of shit that I will do if I feel super awkward. I'll just do something completely insane to break my own, like, internal level of, like, oh my god, I can't handle how awkward this is. I have found myself many times, like, maybe not full-on breakdancing, but, like, I don't know if you can see me, Tiam, but, like, you know, just doing, like, little, like, you know.
Just little mini circles?
Yeah, just, like, doing, like, little, like, hand jives or, like, you know, like, very noticeably, like, doing stuff with my head. Like, if I'm, like, standing in line at a buffet or something, like, it's just, I find myself doing weird shit like that to, like, break my own tension. And I don't know if yours is physical or, like, how would you say when did you first sort of realize that was a thing of yours?
Well, I know exactly what you mean, because it's, like, the tension builds up inside of you, and then it almost comes to a breaking point where you're like, all right, what am I gonna do to break this in my own head? And then yes, either you did, well, some people start dancing.
Yep.
Some people just say, like, off the wall inappropriate things. But I've always had that. I don't know, I grew up, I think you learn that from people. Like, I grew up with, I was mostly living with my grandparents when I was a kid. Okay. And my grandfather was, like, that type of dude where it was always like that's the way he dealt with anything was jokes.
Yep.
Well, and news. But it goes, like, hand in hand with, I don't know, just having, like, a dark sense of humor that you could kind of, like, try to pull out at any time. Yep. And sometimes, yeah, it comes out in very awkward and horrifying ways.
Yep, I literally 100% am in the same place. I got it from my grandpa, and my mom actually got it from my grandpa, her father. So that's 100%. And I never realized they even did it until I heard. I don't know if you've ever had those moments where, like, you hear yourself say something and you're like, oh, fuck, that is exactly how my mom or grandpa or whoever would have handled it.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you have. It's not like a flashback, but, like, it's like a flash to them where you're like, oh, that's exactly what they would have said in that moment.
I have become them.
It's scary as you get older too, because then as you start to realize stuff about yourself, it's just like, oh, that's where I got that from.
Uh-huh.
And then you realize the people you're getting stuff from, like, aren't the greatest people in the world.
Oh no, yeah, no, you're totally right. would you say it was a characteristic when you were a kid, or did it happen more when you got sort of more self-aware as like an adolescent?
Definitely kicked in harder in adolescence, okay. Just because I think everybody gets a little, that's like your first heavy dose of becoming jaded and sarcastic on the way to adulthood is, you know, when you hit adolescence. So if you already have that type of awkward, like, sense of humor in the face of adversity, it just gets magnified in that stage because you're hormonal and bitchy on top of it.
Would you categorize your humor deflection as, like, more like sarcasm, or does it kind of run the gamut of, like, all kinds of different things?
I mean, it's a lot of sarcasm, but then there's also, like, outlandish things that kind of pop in your head. Like, I don't know if you've ever had this thought, but, like, I've been at, like, a funeral of, like, of a close family member and just, like, been thinking to myself, like, what is the, like, the weirdest thing I could do right now? Like, if I just went up and, like elbow smashed the casket, like, what would anybody do? But it's along the same lines of, like, because there's so much horrifying grief in the room that inside it's like, how, is there anything I could do that would break up the... But, of course, the answer is no. I'm sure there's been a psychopath or two who have actually given into those thoughts, but I don't know if you've ever had thoughts like that in, like, massively inappropriate places, but it even creeps into me in those situations.
So there's so much to unpack here. So number one, it's never been that extreme for me, and I want to get back to that. Number one, we had a guest on the show. I don't know if you ever met David Horning when you were in Cleveland.
I don't think so.
So he actually was telling us that his aunt, I want to say through marriage, was murdered. And at the funeral, he was doing stuff like that because he just didn't know how
to cope otherwise.
And he was talking about it on the show. We'll have to go back and listen to it. But I just remembered that was the only other time I've heard someone mention that. But it's not an uncommon thing. Number two, as you're talking about it, what's occurring to me is it's almost kind of a powerful thing to be able to call out the awkwardness through, like, what you're saying, which is, like, you know, it manifesting itself as an action, right? Like,
yes,
it's insane to me.
Very empowering.
Yes, how quickly you sort of take control of any situation, because on one hand you're almost adding this level of catharsis to doing the thing, you know, to break the tension, to get it out of your head for a multitude of reasons, but also, like, doing something to that extreme, having that sort of action, to me, I mean, I guess it could be construed as there's some instability, but to me, it's almost like it's almost like literally like taking a knife and slashing your wrist in front of everyone and letting the blood run down and being like, what? Like, what are you going to fucking do? You know what I mean? Like, it's such a power play that, and I don't know if that's how you view it or how it, if you even process it when those things occur to you.
Well, no. Well, when you look at it psychologically, that's probably exactly what it is. And if you really break it down, it's probably also selfish.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's necessarily because, like, you're acting on behalf of the good of what you think would be good for everyone in the room.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very empowering. And that, but I think you get emboldened by stuff like that. Like, the more you do stand up and are in front of people, and then if you happen to be one of those people that says horrifying things, then you feel even more empowered by it when it works. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that. So on one hand, I'm like, oh, that kind of, like, my whole, I don't know if it's a resolution, but my whole new thing is to lean into awkwardness instead of recoiling from
that. The best that I think we're all just trying to figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
How to be, like, yeah, have that, like, not, because again, it's a power thing. It's like, you feel like the moment had you instead of you being in control of the moment.
Yes.
When something awkward is happening.
Yes,
so
exactly.
I feel like that's a good resolution.
Yeah. I mean, and 'cause that's the thing I keep noticing more and more, like, you know, if I follow my instincts, which is just to kind of like shrivel into myself because I said or did something embarrassing, it magnifies the situation so much more versus if I'm just like, I'm such a fucking idiot. You know what I mean? Like, and it's hard. It's like one of the hardest things I've ever like challenged myself to do. And I do think to some degree, naming the awkwardness is a beneficially like, again, you know, maybe not, you know, elbow dropping the casket, but like, you know, to the level of like, you know, calling it out for what it is and, you know, literally just saying, oh my God, this is an awkward situation. You know, that in and of itself takes so much air out of, I think that can be a very selfless and beneficial thing for a group of people. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, sure. You can totally use it to the advantage and the benefit of everybody. I don't think that's what's particularly going on inside of me, though.
Okay. Okay. That's good to know. So for you, is it more of like a self-preservation, not just awkwardness, but maybe do you often find you're protecting yourself from other emotions?
I mean, sure, probably. I think that's what, I don't know. I think a lot of people find themselves in the world of comedy are have that about them, where it's just like you can run away from whatever you're running away from with humor if you really want to seem like it. So it's a very powerful comedy is like a catch-all for just kind of weird people, weird, maladjusted, fucked up, but genuinely well-meaning people, I guess.
Yeah. No, I could see that for sure. I think, you know, and you're right. I think it does take a certain group of individuals to be good at comedy. You have to be a certain type of person on some level. Because I think that, you know, I've met a spectrum of people in comedy, but the ones who are ultimately the most, I guess, sharp and observant, you know, they have these different characteristics that sort of make them unable to traditionally express themselves. That's what comedy does, is allows them to express themselves, their anger, their fears, their frustrations, and, you know, this form of comedy. So that's a really good point. And it's probably, I'm guessing, a huge part of how you got into comedy.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also, there's almost something more freeing about that than... Because, I mean, look, and you are very aware of this, talk to the, you know, significant others of any comics, and they'll be like, well, they're a lot more emotionally closed off than they are on stage.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, to be fair, one of the reasons I have not done comedy in a while, and it kind of boiled down to, like, you know, I think the person that I am is too emotive. That's sort of my weird thing, is that, I will say, no, you're right, my boyfriend would definitely tell you there are times when he needs me to like explain what the fuck and I don't do it, because I don't like confrontation. I avoid confrontation.
No.
Desperately. Yeah. Desperately, because I'm real bad, and that's the thing, the reason I'm bad at confrontation, I'm probably better than I used to be, but I'm like, you know, 50-50 Italian Irish, so basically like emotions for me are not like, I don't stuff them down, but I also don't properly evenly distribute them like I should. So they all
That's
just kind
of mix, by the way, Irish and Italian.
Yeah,
my wife and I are not procreating.
Yeah, I know.
That's like one of the many reasons.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the problem. All the Irish and Italians did, you know, 80 years ago, and so now we're all here. So
they mixed together quite nicely.
They did. They made. So many kids, and now we're all angry. It's just, we're all angry, loud Americans, because that's what the Italians and the Irish people bestowed upon us. But honestly, like, I don't know. I guess my problem is, I feel like often the criticism I got a lot, and a lot of people said this was more of a sex thing, but, like, I was too angry. Like, and that's a feedback I get a lot on Twitter too, is I come off as too angry, and why are you so angry and can't you be angry? And I'm like, aren't fucking comedians angry though? Like, isn't that our thing? But apparently I was even too angry for like comedy. So I kind of just, I wasn't really sure how to like, to level it off in a way that still comes across as like incisive and like, you know, biting, but apparently not like pissy and whiny and loud. So, So I kind of just backed off of that for a little while. But, you know, you're right. I think, you know, when did you sort of automatically link the two sort of defense mechanism and stand-up comedy right away? Or is that something you sort of realized later on?
I mean, it's something I wanted to do like my whole life, but I waited a while to do it. Okay. I was like 27 before I finally worked, okay. Just because I like horrifying stage fright.
Yeah.
But it was something I always wanted to do. I didn't necessarily link them, but once I started doing it, the more and more I moved along, I kind of started to realize like, oh, your personality is actually, if you know, you can suit yourself to this. Like, it's an advantage to be you.
Yeah.
like trying to do this as opposed to, I don't know, normal people, for lack of a better term.
things that are an advantage in comedy, it's like bizarro world. Things that are great for you in comedy are not great for you in real life. Like,
no, not at all. Because then you have thoughts about elbow smashing casket at Uncle's funeral, and it's just, but it's always that there's a certain type of like thinking and demeanor, I feel like, that a lot of people who are, well, I mean, just comedy in general or in entertainment or whatever reason, you want everybody to look at you and see how talented you are. There's a lot of that mentality in that, I feel like.
And that is a hard thing. It's been a really hard thing for me to break. And I'm sure, I think just anybody who's normal, like you and I, even if you have elements of yourself, like with you, it's like the humor is deflection. Mine's more of like attention whore. Like, so that's what I think the element of me that drives me to be in entertainment.
It all comes down. If you wanted to boil everybody down, I think it all comes down to attention
whore. Well, it's funny you say that, because then I read interviews with like famous actors and celebrities that are like, oh, I never leave my house and I'm this huge shut-in. And like, I was reading something on Cillian Murphy recently, and he was just like, I hate doing press. I hate going to like award shows. I hate all of it. All I want to do is act. And I'm wondering if it's like you start out thinking maybe you want that thing or you want attention and then you get it and don't want it. Maybe that's what it is.
I mean, I totally get that, because I'm also a homebody, mm-hmm. and you never know if that's just like a thing they say.
Right.
But yeah, I understand that. And there are some like notoriously closed off famous people that don't do, like Bill Murray doesn't have an agent. He just has like an answering machine that he checks once in a while, and he doesn't, you know, so there's, I understand that. Like the shut-in part of it, or no? Well, shut-in might be a strong word.
Sure.
But the wanting to be isolated and not enjoying going out and interacting with people, I totally understand.
Sure.
Like that part of it, so they can go like hand in hand.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, because you can.
It's almost like you want to be an attention whore, but like 100% on your terms.
Yes, exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. Yes, it's like you want the attention for what you can do, but nothing outside of that.
Yes, but don't bother me ever otherwise for anything.
Exactly. Like you want the attention for your ability, but not who you are, almost, in a way, because that's why people are very like protective of their personal lives. It's like, no, I don't want you to give me attention. I just want you to give my performance the attention. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, you want you want the world to be perfect, and you want it to all, you want to be given the amount of attention that
I know.
Deserve, but I know. In the appropriate setting. Mm-hmm. Like it's all ego.
Yeah, no, and you're 100% right. Something I think that I try to teach myself every day is like the idea of like it at some level, everybody's got to sacrifice, sort of thing. And so sort of just always being okay with like being an open book, always okay with like not caring that like, you know, how I show up on the internet, always being okay with like criticism, things that if I eventually do become like, you know, visibly successful, like those are things that like I'm going to have to accept as like, you know, you're going to miss a lot of things about anonymity effectively, and just understanding that with all the success. And it sounds really cliche, but just actually accepting that in your head, knowing like you're going to be giving up a lot of privacy and people having no opinions about you for like everyone knowing all your shit all the time and having something to say about it. So,
yes. And everybody with technology being what it is now, like everybody's opinion is viewable. Yep. And you could see stuff about you if you want to.
Yep.
And
exactly.
I think part of being a shut-in, or a good idea of it anyway, would also be like never Googling yourself. Yes. But I don't feel like anybody actually who has any level of fame doesn't pay attention to what people say. And there's more opinions that are that can get to you now more than ever. So it's kind of it just seems like emotionally taxing.
That is such a good point. And that's the thing, the new sort of cliche I see in so many interviews now is like, I don't Google myself. I don't read what people write about me, that kind of thing. And I don't think it's even, a lot of people interpret it as like they're bragging, like they're trying to say that they don't care what people think about them. But it's the opposite. It's, I can't look at that stuff because I care too much about what people think and it's going to get in my head.
Yeah, and both of those, I'm sure there are people who have both those thoughts towards it. But I don't believe that famous people don't Google themselves.
Oh, yeah. 100%, because you have that whole paradox of, I want the attention, but I also don't want want people to talk about me. No, that doesn't work. You can't have it both ways. So,
and yeah, and if you're Daniel Day-Lewis, it's a beautiful thing because everybody loves everything you do. But like, if you're Adam Sandler, like, I wouldn't fucking Google myself.
I know. Like, and even like people who are really fucking good. Like, I mean, I personally think Adam Sandler is talented.
I like it. He looks like he's allegedly he's great in this new movie,
The Uncut Gems. Yeah.
And he's not a bad actor or anything like that, but he makes all these, like, well-meaning comedies that a lot of people think are terrible. But, like, all the people who think those things are bad, that movie wasn't made for you anyways. But there's just, like, so much anger out there that's like, yeah, how much more, he's probably worth more money than anybody in Hollywood. Jesus, he's been making hits for 20 stupid hits at that. And I am one of those people, by the way. And I used to be angry about it, where I would whine and complain that that someone like Adam Sandler is churning out all these bullshit movies. But then it's like there's a place and a purpose for that.
I'm going to use it. I hope it's okay with you, but I am going to use the phrase well-meaning whenever I'm being tactful about somebody's project now, from now on. Because it's so beautiful. Like, it's just, it's not at all rude. It can come off as slightly, you know, backhandedy.
I think it comes off as very bad.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think the problem is that, like, people in LA lack subtlety. So when you at least offer subtlety, there's like a small appreciation for the attempt sort of thing. So I'm totally
meaning phrase the more I think about it.
Well, just here, like, people will just say, oh, that's trash, oh, that's garbage, oh, that's this, like, no one really tries to like tiptoe around anything. So I think when you try to use subtlety, people A, don't really put that much thought into like the fact of what you're really saying, and B, it's, you know, appreciated that you're not just calling something awful or wonderful. So yeah, I'm totally putting that in the Rolodex
to be able to if you don't like something, it probably wasn't for you anyway.
Right.
I think that's why professional wrestling fans get so angry whenever anything weird happens. Like, I don't watch wrestling, but I have several friends who do.
Point of note, he's the only male comedian from Cleveland who does not watch wrestling. Just had to point that out.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Shear, who is a good friend of mine, watches it.
Right.
Yeah, Jordan watches
literally every male that's in the comedy scene from Cleveland loves wrestling except you. Like, and that's a refreshing. It's a breath of refreshing air.
Well, I was a fan when I was a kid, but okay.
Me too. I was in the Tatanka and Bret the Hitman Hart eras.
My God, you and I have to. We're about the same age.
Yeah, we are.
That's early mid 90s.
Right.
But, uh, But I think that's why they're whenever anything bad happens in wrestling, I know about it immediately. Well, through Twitter, but also like Shear and Dan Brown will talk to me about them as if like they're like mainstream things
right.
happening that I should be abreast of, but I only know about it because of them.
Right.
But I think that's the reason they get so mad is because like, no, this is like a niche form of entertainment. It's meant for us. So when you don't give us what we want, we get like very, very angry about that.
I can see that.
Which I understand that anger. The anger that I don't understand is like, oh, but like people who hate Adam Sandler movies. And it's like, well, then just don't watch them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, instead of hopping on the internet and leaving a shitty Google review for whatever his most recent well-intended project was.
Well, and I think you're right. I mean, I think that sort of music or that sort of, I guess, movies, film, TV, those sorts of things are literally just like, if you go to Popeyes, like, you know what you're getting. Like, you're not going in there and expecting, like, Michelin-starred food at a fast food restaurant. Like, you know what you're going in to get. So why are you putting it even on that comparable level? Like, you should know walking into this. And that's the whole thing I didn't get about when Scorsese. So number one, Scorsese says Marvel movies aren't cinema or whatever his quote was.
Oh, yeah, that was another thing that, comic book fans.
Number one.
Pro wrestling fans. And there's a lot of crossover there. They also get married.
Totally. Oh, yeah, absolutely. My thing was, number one, duh, Martin Scorsese. You did not need to say that. And I think, number two, anyone who is truly a fan of Marvel, which, like, full, complete disclaimer, I've never seen a single Marvel movie, and I don't intend to.
That's actually impressive. I like your... to that as well.
What's that?
I like your commitment to
oh
that.
Yeah. Yeah, my boyfriend will turn it on, I'll put the fucking noise canceling headphones on and like an eye mask and just be like, nope, not happening, this isn't happening. But like, he was saying it like it was some sort of fucking revelation. And number two, I feel like anyone who's a reasonable Marvel fan, and my boyfriend is a Marvel fan, my best friends are, everyone I know is a Marvel fan, they were all like, yeah, that's right. Like, they didn't get mad. They were just like, yeah, we know. It's meant to be fun. It's not meant to get Oscars. Like, that's the whole point. And the sort of third element of that, which is the people who legitimately got mad at him saying that. And it was like, do you think, like, have you seen actual, like, films? Like, I mean, and again, it's not to say it's not worthy of every sort of accolade that it's received. It's you know, it makes people happy, and honestly I am very much in the camp of let people enjoy things as long as it's not harming other people. So
yes, I used to think I had that philosophy, but then I realized I was very down on people for liking certain stuff. Yeah. And as I get older, I find myself actually having that philosophy more and more.
And I'm still bad about it to some level, and it goes back to something you were saying just a moment ago. And actually, it ties into what we're talking about right now, which is the idea that, you know, don't get mad at people because they're not into your thing. You know what I mean? Like, don't get mad because they're not into your thing.
That's a tough one.
Don't get mad, you know, if they don't know, you know, what you're talking about. Because what ends up happening for me, when I notice that I start to shit on other people's things, it's because the thing that I'm shitting on, it's been tainted to me by a overly aggressive fan base, I guess.
That happens with a lot of things.
Yeah. Like, so my biggest example, as everyone knows for me on here, is Game of Thrones. Never watched it. Didn't care to.
Me neither, actually. I'm a proud member of that club as well.
This is so great. Yeah, because I so rarely also meet anyone who didn't. And the thing was, I was just in a place where it was like, it was on, like, the first two seasons, I was like, yeah, no, if it's for you, great, I don't care, but then the conversations would evolve into this, why wouldn't you watch it? And I'm like, I don't like dragons, I'm not really, like, a big, like, medieval sort of, like, what is not medieval? It's all these things, and then they start going down this, like, 15-minute-long lecture about, like, why I need to be watching this show. And then the resentment starts to happen where it's like, I am allowed to say that I am not interested in this. Like,
yes. And then you almost feel like you're, it's like a move of defiance after that.
I get defensive. Yeah. Like, I'm getting a little defensive about the fact that I'm already like predispositioned to just not want to watch something. And now, like, and I've told you that, and you're not letting it go. So then eventually I found myself getting into that place where I was like, hur, I like Game of Thrones. And you know what I mean? And I caught myself becoming that person. And then I love how, like, the zeitgeist does this, like, volleying where it's like, not liking Game of Thrones is not a personality type. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that, yeah, it becomes a thing. Oh, are you that person that doesn't, you're not into whatever. It's like, I'm not saying it to be contrarian. I don't care for wizardry.
Exactly. My
wife and I have had that. We've been in that loop for a long time because she loves Game of Thrones. And also, by the way, so do most,
everyone.
Maybe I just associate with a brand of nerdy comics, but it seems like everybody that I know in comedy loves Game of Thrones also. So I'll get to any show. And, like, you know, my wife will be talking to other comics about what happened. Her and Jerry Joffe, actually. Oh, another cliche.
Yeah.
Had a debate, but they were, like, arguing over whether or not they thought the last season was a turd. And just listening to them throwing all these names out there and everything, and I was just sitting there kind of lost. And I was like, yeah, I can't... whatever it is, I just can't bring to myself. I've never seen a Lord of the Rings movie. Anything where there's a possibility that there's a dragon.
Exactly.
I'm probably not interested.
I'm guessing you didn't watch Harry Potter or read them, did you?
No, I've never.
Me neither.
I've never
seen, not a single one.
Harry Potter, yeah. And all my, not all my friends, but a bunch of my friends really liked those books and movies, which
yeah.
I thought was kind of a weird thing, not to be a sexist or whatever, but I didn't think Harry Potter was appropriate because we were like 14 at the time. I was just like, are you really like still into wizards and shit? But I don't know. I guess I just never.
What's hilarious about you saying the age of 14 is most of my friends who are in their 30s are still like, I'm a Slytherin. I'm a Hufflepuff. And I'm just like, oh God. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, like like guys I went to high school with, like big jacked football player dudes would be like, oh, did you just read The Sorcerer and the Serpent or whatever the fuck? Like, you realize the words coming out of your mouth do not matter you at all?
Oh my God, I literally have 12 listeners, and after this I'm probably going to have like 4 because... All of them are like, oh, you're gonna talk shit about Harry Potter? All right, well, go fuck yourself. And it's true. Like,
well, but hey, to be fair, I haven't seen it, and if you enjoy it, good for
and
you.
And that's it. I'm trying to be so much better about like the whole idea of letting people enjoy things, because I think it's true. Like, people should be allowed to like whatever they like. I think it's a really weird thing to be shitty about, like, oh, you like, I don't know. It's just, I'm trying to be better. But if anybody ever wants to know why I actually rode Game of Thrones pretty hard all the way to the end and even just mocked everybody after everybody said the finale sucked. It really did. It came from a place of they started it is what I'm boiling it down to.
I'm going to be honest. I felt that exact same way. Like when I found out the most people didn't like the last season, I was like, well, yeah, you all deserve that.
Exactly. Cause and that's the thing too. Like, it's almost like a karma thing of like, karma's trying to prevent you from getting that invested with something so insignificant in your life. You know what I mean? Like, and so if you choose to allocate like your compassion that you could be spending on working for charities or volunteering or helping, you know, anyone do anything, and you choose to invest that allocation of compassion into a television show or a movie that like no one owed you, then I'm sorry, you get what you get. Like, you get disappointment out of it. If you're not using that compassion to do something constructive with your life, then I'm sorry, you're gonna be disappointed in the way things are gonna turn out.
See, isn't it so easy? This is the anger that we're talking about. It's so easy to get down that road of where we're both just saying we're trying to be understanding as we get older, and then you just go up. I'm like, you know what? Fuck them.
And then I'm like, I don't understand why everyone thinks I'm so angry on stage. And now I'm up here just like, everyone's getting what they deserve. Fuck you if you like Game of Thrones. God damn, that was bad. Okay. So, I will tell you, like, for my humor deflection stuff, it usually only happens, in instances. So, like I said, it is when I'm feeling awkward a little bit, because, you know, I do, like, break dance. But it's mostly, like, funerals are a great point. Like, I actually would never in my life thought I'd give a eulogy. And I literally went up and improv'd one for my grandfather's funeral because, A, it was really sad. And B, because that is the grandpa who would have done the exact same fucking thing. And it just felt like the thing to do. So I mostly...
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Did you just know that you were going to know what to say in the moment, and that's why you didn't prep anything? Or was it like how conscious of a decision was that, well, I guess it would have to be a con, but, like, you know what I mean? At what point did you decide to go that route?
Sorry, it was a quick aside in case you can see me waving at you. There's a mosquito in here, which this is why it sucks to live in California, and that's the only reason. I have a mosquito in my house in January. But the thing with my grandpa, so I think what happened is I got to the funeral and there was discussion. They wanted the grandkids to all say something, but there was like 15 of us who were like, okay, only a few of us will. And I think I had been kicking it around in my head, like, you know, like I can think of at least 3 good talking points to sort of build off of. And I think I'd spent maybe an hour there, and like I could just tell how like sad my mom was because we were having sort of that old like before the funeral, like, visiting hours or whatever. And so finally I walked up to my uncle or my mom or something, and I was like, hey, I'll say something. And then knew I was just going to say something. I knew it was all going to be funny stuff. Like, I knew it was intentionally going to be, remembering some funny things and wanting to say them. Cause they were just my grandpa had just some like crazy ass anecdotes. Like, I actually, okay, so this is an anecdote I told, but I changed the words on it to clean it up for the funeral.
Well, yeah, I think you gotta work clean.
Yeah, you gotta work clean. So, and this was before I started doing stand up or improv when this all went down. I had never really told jokes in front of an audience at this point. So I knew that I wasn't there. My mother told me about this, and this wasn't even that long ago. I was living in Ohio City right after I got married, like 10 years ago. And I remember telling my grandmother about, because she was asking me about the neighborhood in Ohio City. You know, it just started to gentrify. It was this area right outside of downtown Cleveland, for anyone not Cleveland that lives there.
Or is, yeah, it's a very, like, directly on top of Cleveland. And, yeah, I don't know when they started to build new stuff in there and try to get all the young,
yeah,
the young hipsters to come in and start paying rent.
Yeah, I knew it was like the up and coming neighborhood. So we bought a house there, and one of my first weeks there, because she was asking me, because she hadn't been to the house yet, my grandmother, but she had heard that it was like literally on the cusp of some questionable areas. And I was like, well, you know, I was like, on one hand, there's like all these nice families that are starting to move in, and like our house just got completely redone and it's beautiful. And there's all these nice shops and restaurants coming up. And I was like, and on the other hand, I was getting gas the other day and saw a woman wearing a t-shirt that says I Heart Blowjobs on it. And then, you know, and this was 11 years ago, and not, and this was before like it was like, you know, fun and, you know, clever for people to wear that stuff, especially if they want everyone to know that they're, you know, I'm frisky, you know, I'm sex positive, I'm gonna wear this t-shirt that says I Heart Blowjobs. So at the time, it really just threw me off, and it just seemed like apropos nothing. Like, it just didn't seem like there was an African-American woman wearing an I Heart Blowjobs t-shirt on it in, you know, a bad area of Cleveland. And I was like, I don't know how to feel about this. So I tell my grandmother that, and she looks at my grandfather and she goes, you know what a blowjob is? And she says it like loud, you know, because he's at the age where he's like already like hard of hearing and not all there. And she's like, hey, you know what a blowjob is? And my grandpa, without missing a beat, turns to her and he goes, no, show me. And he's like, you know, he's like old and he doesn't ever talk. He says nothing, like, ever. He never, like, he's literally like the grandpa that says the something for the first time in 3 weeks in, like, a, you know, Adam Sandler movie or something. Like,
but he knew, but he was funny in the moment.
Exactly. And that's, yes. And so I was like, well, okay, I'm going to tell this story. But the way I altered it, and somehow I thought to do all this even before I went up, was that I altered it so that she was making a, you remember those international coffees?
Yeah.
They were the instant coffees? Didn't they used to have
commercials
yes!
for them?
Yes, like yes, yes. So I said,
be like two ladies sharing a special moment.
Yes, and they had that little jingle, and it was like, celebrate the moments of your life.
Oh my God, yeah, I do remember right? that now that you said.
You're like, oh, holy shit, that took me back.
Yeah.
So she, I told the story, she was making an international coffee named French Kiss, and she asked him if he knew what a French Kiss was, and he said, no, show me. But yeah, just like, I needed to tell that stuff because he was really fucking funny. But also because I knew that's what he would do, and also because that was just my instinct to just be like, I'm gonna say something crazy to, like, you know, make
yes, but feel- you had the sense to realize that well, there are elderly people and children here, yeah. So I'm gonna switch that around a little bit.
The best part is that my mom knew the actual story, and just watching her face light up, realizing how I'm completely retelling the story to be G-rated.
Yes, she was probably, if she didn't know that going in, I would imagine she would have been a little bit horrified at at the prospect of that. Because then, like you said, if you did tell the honest story, then every kid, it's already bad enough going to a funeral, but imagine, like, having being a parent and on your way home, so, like, your 8-year-old kid is just like, so what's a blowjob? Like, oh, God, what a horrible day to have this conversation.
Well, my father just died, but you see,
yeah.
When two people love each other, or just, you know, met over, you know, an alley.
That would be a moment that kid would remember, too, because I don't really remember whenever I found out what anything was, but I remember I found out blow me was a bad term because I heard it in Ace Ventura, and then I started saying it as just like a casual insult to people, I guess, and then I got in trouble for that. And then when I found out what it actually meant, I was like, oh, okay, this is a... I remember that, but I feel like anybody who learned what a blowjob was at the eulogy at a funeral, that would probably also stick out as a landmark of, oh, I remember when I found out what that
was. I mean, honestly, what you're saying, though, like, how I found out what things meant were by overhearing someone say them, repeating them, and then having my mom go, whoa, 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 whoa. And then I'd have to be like, what? Why? Why can't I say blowjob? What does that mean?
Yes, exactly. Because it's so exciting to throw around a term when you're a little kid that you don't even know what it means, but you know it's insulting.
That's how I found out fuck. That's how I found out a whore. Like, I just started saying those things, and my mom's like, hold up.
I had to wrangle you in every once in a while.
Yeah, although it's funny now how many, like, people I know, like, us, our age that are parents that, like, and I actually encourage this wholeheartedly, is just they don't care, like, what words their kids know.
I think that's the best, that's the way that we should be moving as a people in general. But
me too. I mean, I think, because I think their philosophy, and I've seen this written by a couple different people, is that, like, I would much rather my kid walk into preschool, fuck this, fuck that, you know, hell, damn, ass, cunt, whatever, than walking in and saying something like marginally like racist, or, you know, dropping, like, you know, an epithet of some sort, which, I mean, they're only going to get that if you're teaching them that, obviously. But I think there is an interesting, there needs to be a shift in what's considered like obscenity versus what's okay to say. Like, there needs to be a big shift in that.
I agree. And also, it's just really funny when little kids swear.
I know. The thing is, I don't even like kids, but whenever I see, like, a photo of someone's, like, toddler or, like, 5-year-old just fucking, like, flipping the bird to the camera, I can't help it. It's the greatest thing.
Yeah, that's always the funniest thing to do is, like, teach a little kid, like, oh, go say this in front of your mom.
What was it? Shit, who were we with? We were with somebody... Maybe it was when we were home at Christmas. Yes, we were home visiting Adam's dad's stepmom and his stepsister, and she has like a toddler. And I forget what they taught him, but like, or the dad taught him something about like move bitch or something like that. Like he just got him to say move bitch, like to like because it's in a rap song, not because it's he was yelling that at his wife or whatever. But like he was like. He's like, say the line. The mom's just like, no, no, stop it. And then he goes, move, bitch. And then we all went, bah, ha, ha, ha. Like, everybody thought it was funny regardless of the fact that, like, the mom was like, don't do it, don't do it.
Yes, and it was inappropriate, and he won the room.
Exactly. It's always the funniest when the stakes are higher then, you know? It's when that's when it's the most funny. I mean, that's honestly, again, that was a hard line I had to walk with comedy was like, you know, it becomes funnier the more outrageous, right? But then there's a tipping point. So, like, walking that line between did I go too far or, you know, is this, you know, hilarious and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And you also have to figure out what you, like, personally, like, not you individually, but, like, what you can and cannot say and what levels of tone people are willing to accept from you as, you know, whatever it is that you are. Because there are some people who can really get, like, they'll say some shit and you're just like, I don't know how they get away with saying that, but they get away with saying whatever they want. And then there are some people where it's like, ah, Jesus, can you tone it down a little bit? And
so this is literally a conversation I was having with a couple friends of mine last night, and I'd be really interested to get your take on it, especially now being post-Ohio as I am. Like
post Ohio. I like thinking of it that way.
Post Ohio, yeah. So the thing that I really, really remember struggling with, and not that I had a lot of frame of comparison, but it seemed like the hardest part of Ohio, or at least the part, you know, Northeast Ohio, if that's where you're mostly operating out of, is you never knew who you were talking to in the crowd, right? Like you never knew if you had,
you can catch a lot of different crowds there,
and that's it. And like, you could even kind of guess based on the venue sometimes. Like, if you were working at Hilarities, you're more inclined to be getting like a white, you know, wealthy suburban crowd on a Saturday night.
we all know the difference between Hilarities and the
Improv. But that's the thing. There would even be times though, like if I was at we did like the basement, the cabaret room or stuff, like on Wednesday. You don't know who you're getting, even though it's at Hilarities. You don't know, like, if you're getting a crowd from Medina or if you're getting a crowd from Brecksville. Like, you don't know what you're getting. And that was a big thing for me, too. Like, I would be at Funny Stop a lot, which is outside of Akron. And it's a really, it's a crapshoot because you'd assume just outside of Akron, you're getting a lot of, like, the red part, red state of, you know, Ohio. But you don't always get that. So
yeah, and I mean, Akron itself is blue, but it's, like, surrounded by, as you were saying about Ohio City earlier, you're like, yeah, it's nice, but it's surrounded by shadiness. Akron is, Akron's very Democratic, but then it's just, like, surrounded by, it's very red, very close to there, and very country also.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Funny Stop, and also sometimes you might be at the Funny Stop, and there might not even be people there.
Yeah, yeah. That was another
I had to take a shot at Funny Stuff because I still kind of hate them. But
I want to talk about that definitely offline. I want to talk about it online, but we only have like 10 more minutes and I want to talk about some other things. So the whole post-Ohio thing. So obviously, and I mean, there's no arguing, you are in a red state and I am in a blue state. And there's probably no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I currently live in Oklahoma. Right. I am red as far as the eye can see.
And so have you been doing comedy since you moved to Oklahoma?
Yeah, I've a lot of weird places, but I'm like a few hours north of Dallas. I'm like an hour away from like Tulsa and Oklahoma City, and then I'm very close to Colorado, like the state line, like not any
oh wow.
I went up to I'm 7 hours away from Denver.
Okay.
But since I've been out here, I've been in like Dallas, Wichita Falls. Oddly enough, one of the main guys who books me used to live in the same little small town of Oklahoma that I do. Cool. So he has kind of a couple of weird, a w- couple of weird rooms he runs within within distance of here. But yeah, it's just been like a lot of Texas, Oklahoma. I've been up to Colorado, Nebraska. So yeah, just places like that in the Midwest, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Although this is not really the Midwest, but
so do you? It sounds then there's still potential there to kind of maybe run into. Because I was kind of wondering if you were just exclusively doing things in Oklahoma, you'd almost always know you're having a red crowd. But if you're going more into like these other larger metropolitan areas, are you still finding it's hard to see what the crowd is doing?
I mean, Dallas and Wichita Falls seems pretty fucking red, but I don't know if that's that or if that's my perception just because, like, there's a lot of dudes in cowboy hats. But it's also hard for me to tell specifically because I don't talk about, like, anything political. I just don't. That's not my thing.
Yeah.
So it would actually probably be hard for me to tell. Like, I don't think if you watched my act, I don't think you can tell what I am politically, like, if you wanted to.
Okay.
So I would actually probably be a bad person to ask that because I genuinely don't know. But it seems like every crowd I've seen here, they seem pretty red. I don't know.
That makes sense. I think for me, sorry, did I cut you off? What were you gonna say?
Oh, no, you're fine.
The thing that I find is my act isn't very political, though I don't make a lot of attempts to, like, to make it completely politics devoid, you know, like, neutral. The thing I think I was thinking about more from a perspective of just the things that you talk about and how they're received. You know what I mean? Because, like, you know, I used to have a whole joke about how I'm in this open relationship and I'm allowed to sleep with women and he's allowed to sleep with men, but he doesn't want to sleep with men. And so I was like, this is a great deal for me. And it would be really, really weird if I would deliver that at like a moose lodge in rural Michigan versus if I did it anywhere in Cleveland. So
yeah, the moose lodges and I mean, not to, but I guess if you're going to break it down on what you would assume of people, I would think the Moose Lodge in Michigan, they'll like jokes about like drinking, but anything that sounds like remotely empowering to a woman, they probably not might. I don't think they would necessarily like go for that, but that I feel like that joke would kill in most places. And it's also funny if you're talking about red and blue crowds, they both do get upset, but it's by different.
And I think you make a great point that you can't make it so granular as far as like specifically like fuck Trump or, you know, whatever. It can be more broad in the sense of what categories are you covering? Like, if you're going to be talking about sexuality, it's got to be pretty like vanilla, you know, milk toast. If you're going to be talking about this or that, you need to be aware of like, you know, the nuances of that, or just stay away from those topics altogether.
Yeah, I intentionally avoid stuff like like I used to like say a lot of I used to have a lot of bits about religion. But like doing mics at like in like Kent and Akron and like the Stone Tavern and stuff like that stuff can go over very well there. Mm-hmm. But then you get out in like the middle of nowhere. It's like, yeah, I tried to tell that abortion bit at like the one of the first gigs I did. And then like 3 days later, the guy who booked the show called me and was like, do me a favor, don't ever say that again. I was like, all right, like, because there's something in you that wants to be like, no, I'm going to say whatever the fuck I want. But then there's also a part of you that's like, well, I would like to work. So I guess I can come up with something else if need be.
That is also something I think about all the time, too. And even, like, I don't know, I don't think this makes me exceptional as a woman at all, but people like to paint it as such. Like, the idea of the second you tell me I can't make a joke about something, oh, you better fucking bet I'm going to be making jokes about that thing. You know what I mean? Like, that defiance that is sort of integrated with being a comedian of just kind of like, don't fucking tell me. And I think that's everybody, really, yeah. but especially to a degree where it's like, in so many cases, it's almost a cliche. Like, we self-sabotage because we don't, you know, we don't want to be so much that we don't want to be told what to do. Like, we ruin our chances at having, like, better careers you know, as you said, yep. like, you know, you had the good instinct to keep your mouth shut, but so many of us are so fucking obnoxious and loudmouthy, we're like, fuck success, I just want to be, you know, feel good about myself for 5 minutes on stage tonight and show that motherfucker what's up, so.
Yeah, exactly. Don't censor me, man.
Yeah, like, you can't.
It's
can't.
A very, there's something that taps into, if you have any contrarian in you whatsoever, it's very grinding to you when someone tries to tell you like what to and not say.
Yep. I that's the only reason I only have one arch nemesis in the entire world, and they exist in Cleveland comedy. So
arch nemesis
yes. Everyone already knows who it is, and I've actually talked about the person without even naming her name on the show 100 times, but
I don't even have an arch nemesis.
Well, I think I'm being dramatic. I mean, I think my dislike of her is far greater than her dislike of me. But again, it's she fucking started it. That's what it all boils down to. She fucking started it with some bullshit, and then but really though, I mean that was the whole thing. God damn it, my edible is hitting and I'm losing like my train of thought like within seconds of me talking, and it's really
isn't funny. It and you know what, living in Oklahoma, shocking as it is, we have medical here.
I was gonna ask, that's actually, yes, you're right, that is very shocking.
Unbelievable. I moved here, I didn't even Google it before I moved here because we were already living in Ohio, which does not have it, and then all of a sudden I moved here and I was like, wait a minute, I just have to apply and I can get, and I had like a hip surgery a few years ago.
Oh, shit!
It was very easy for me. I was just like, yeah, this hurts, can I buy weed now? And Oklahoma was like, yes, you can.
So when did you move to Oklahoma?
It's like August. It was so I've been here for like 3 or 4 months, something like that.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you're a noob.
Yeah, new to the area, and there are a lot of, I think I'm the only dude in my neighborhood that does not drive a pickup truck, and I'm not sure if that's gonna eventually alienate me from the herd, but
I have a feeling it won't just be what you drive. It'll probably just be, you know, your whole sort of outlook on life is probably what will alienate you before anything else.
Yeah, more likely that. And also my very pale skin. I am the whitest man in Oklahoma.
Which is saying a lot, yeah.
The sun hits hard here. Like everybody here has like a Texas like that's where I feel like I live. Like everybody's wearing like a cowboy hat, yeah. Pickup truck. Big belt buckle that, you know, their skin looks like leather.
Okay, yeah, I guess that makes
it's
sense.
It's all, yeah, it's very, but I do, it's not bad. I like it.
You're
my wife's in the Air Force. That's why.
That's what I was going to say. Your wife's in the military. I remember you saying that.
Yes, it wasn't for, I didn't move
for
to
fun.
I didn't move to Northwest Oklahoma for the scenery
to fulfill your lifelong dream of moving to Northwest Oklahoma.
Exactly, yeah, there is not, but like I said, I'm a couple of hours from a few major cities.
Yeah, no, that actually sounds cool.
And it's the same shit as I was doing in Cleveland. It's like every weekend, it's like I'm the drives are longer now, but it's all, you know, it's all the same.
Have you found a bizarro world Cleveland comedy community, like where they have their own Jeremy Shear and they have their own...
I haven't got ingratiated to the Tulsa or Oklahoma City comedy communities to the point where I know their characters yet. but I feel like that's something, because every city has their own cast of characters and everything, which we did say we were going to talk about, because I have not been in the Cleveland comedy loop for quite some time. I wasn't in it before I left there, but
you make a good point. Yeah, you make a really good point. I'm gonna drop some drama. If you have like 10 minutes after the show, I'll drop some drama.
I would like to be updated on the comings and goings there. Can I tell a quick story?
Yes, please. Oh my god.
Okay, so I did this gig at a nudist colony in Maryland.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! Sorry, I had to interrupt only because I saw the picture and I showed it to my mother. I loved it so much. Sorry, continue.
You showed that picture to your mother?
I did show the picture to my mother because I thought it was the greatest thing. And my parents just love, like, laughing at, like, hedonism and all that shit. So it just, they thought it was a riot. They loved it.
Oh god, your mother's seen me too close to naked. And speaking of censoring yourself, I deleted that tweet because, once again, the guy who booked that show was like, hey, can you not just have, because like there were two, okay, I did this gig at a nudist colony and you had to perform naked, but I was like wearing a sock for this picture. But I took a picture with like these two old naked ladies and I posted it on Twitter just because I thought it was funny. But then I immediately was, but I guess it's made the rounds. I think once you post something to the internet,
it's there permanent. Forever. Yeah. But, yep.
Yeah. So I'm sure it's out there. Yeah. So I did that show and we're in, it was in Maryland. It was a suburb of Washington, D.C., which is a very blue area. So I was opening for a naked ventriloquist, and she was so she's doing her act. So I went up, and it went really well. They're a great crowd. It's as weird as you could possibly imagine. It's just 150 naked people sitting in a pavilion watching you, but like you get used to it or whatever, right? So I do my thing. I have a good set. I sit down. And her first, she's got two puppets. Her first puppet is just like an alternate version of herself. So she does that act and it goes well and everything. Then she brings out her second puppet, which is a Trump puppet. Okay. And his name is Donald Trump. I saw the puppet she was going to do before the show. Like we were talking about like, you know, what a weird thing this was and everything. I didn't think she was going to have a problem with that at all. She pulls out this Trump puppet and the crowd fucking turns on her. And we're in like a suburb of DC. So I was like, I didn't think she was going to have any problem with that at all.
No. And then all of a sudden,
we're all naked. So the idea that anybody's, like, offended by anything is just, like, immediately even more hilarious to me. But I never saw it coming. I never expected it. But, oh, my God, was that last however long she had that puppet out. It was just a terribly horrifying. And they were, like, polite, and then they clapped at the end. And then I've got like all these, and nobody there looked good, by the way. Like nobody.
No one would. No, that's the thing. Everything I've ever heard about nudist beaches, nudist colonies, topless. No one there is anyone you'd want to see. Like it's always
no,
like,
not a single one. The female ventriloquist and I were like by far the most fuckable people there. Like it wasn't even. It was all just like middle aged, naked, out of shape. Apparently Republican.
I mean, at least she could take solace in knowing they can't throw anything at her. I guess because we're
yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, if they did, I don't know. Want to know where they?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Holy shit, that is that's the best story. You and Mary Santora have some of the best, like, comedy stories.
Oh,
like,
I love Mary. Yeah, she's got a lot of good ones.
I live for her. Like, I told her when she was on the podcast, I was like, dude, you live the fucking coolest life. Like, I'll just look at your Instagram, and all of a sudden, you're just at the West Side Market with the Sklar Brothers. Like, you're just chilling, like, at the West Side Market, getting a Euro with the fucking Sklar Brothers. Like, what the fuck is that shit? So, and then, yeah, that was probably, that's, oh, and then when she, woke up on Dennis Rodman's yacht. That was the other. That was the really good one.
I haven't talked to her in a while. I'm trying.
Yeah, she woke up on Dennis Rodman's yacht one morning. Apparently, so that happened. And
that sounds like an amazing story. I may have to get the skinny on that.
You should. Yeah, it's actually a really really good story.
Everybody's interacting with Dennis Rodman. He makes his rounds.
Dennis. That's it. Everyone I fucking know. There was somebody talked about this recently. Everyone. It's like a Kevin Bacon within 7 degrees, but it's even shorter.
Yes.
Like, you have to know someone like within 2 degrees that has a Dennis Rodman story. Like everybody does.
Well, didn't there's another Cleveland comic that I guess I'm not going to name that used to have a story that he told on stage.
So you're correct, and I think I've heard Jeremy tell this story on Hate Flow before, maybe, and also elsewhere. But we'll talk about it offline, so we don't have to censor it. But he used to have like I think there was like he and his wife used to have some fun with Dennis Rodman, as I understand it. Was that the story you knew?
I mean, yeah, I heard something a lot. I mean, well, Dennis Rodman would be, I guess he would be a guy to have fun with. I don't know. I'm amazed he still owns a yacht. I thought he was like $80 million in debt.
I'm amazed that he is still alive, not just because of his lifestyle choices, but because of his close connections with North Korea.
Yeah, it must be an amazing amount of confidence to be able to walk into North Korea as an American person and
what's
be like,
up?
Oh no, I know I'm walking out alive. Like, this dude loves not the 90s Chicago Bulls. And I mean, we all do, but...
Who doesn't, really? They were on their three-peat or whatever the shit...
I wonder if the other guys on that team could get away with that. You know, Steve Kerr was on that team, too.
Fucking Scottie Pippen, yeah.
Scottie Pippen heading over to North Korea. I think they all be. Tony Kukoc.
Oh, my God. Hey, so where can people find you on social media?
Oh, God. Well, I just have the only thing I have is my Twitter, and that is TM_Francis. I choose not to participate in Facebook because I'm contrarian and also kind of a bit of a cunt. So
I admire it.
Yes, I quit all that. I hate Facebook. Plus then also like people find you on there.
Oh,
I did have it for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden, like, people you went to high school with are like, oh, hey, what's going on? It's like, I didn't want to
look. And I even changed my fucking last name, and they found me. I was like, son of a bitch. What the hell?
Oh, yeah. Same here.
Yep.
It happens, though.
Fucking stalkers, man. You can find us at The Default Setting Pod on Facebook. You can find me at Epic Fall on Twitter and Instagram. Do you have any upcoming shows that you want to promote that are around your area?
Well, it's interesting you say that because ever since I've I don't have any thing to promote, but okay. Ever since I've done that Nudist Colony gig, I have been kind of a known name amongst like weird show bookings.
Oh yeah.
And I'm coming to Los Angeles in February to perform at a naked wedding. Everybody's gonna be naked apparently.
How long are you gonna be here?
I don't know. I haven't worked out. It's over the week. I'll probably be there like Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
If I had to guess.
Yes, definitely. I got to hit you up. There's a couple other people in town there that I would also have to hit up. And Oh, yeah. Do you know there's a lot of Cleveland representation out in Los Angeles? Do you ever... this is a thing we could talk about.
Yeah. So real quick, I want to thank OK Pants for doing our logo, Above Below Entertainment for being our network. And I want to thank TM Francis for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you. It's been a while.
Okay, love you. Bye.